Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 43 of Coffee Talk. Oh my gosh, I can't believe how many episodes we've done. My name is Trevor Huth. I appreciate you joining me. And Nate Kosher is not here this week. He's on vacation. I mean, I don't know, man. No, kidding. Hopefully he's having a good vacation. He went to San Diego while the Padres were away. Not sure what that's all about, but I guess family or something. Anyway, we'll be happy when he comes back next week in his place. Coming back after a few short weeks away, he couldn't stay away. It's Mr. Scott Chu. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It took me a while to find the mute button that I was actually very close to with my cursor. I just kept staring at it. Missed it. But otherwise, doing fantastic. You know, we've had a lot of baseball to watch. We've had Tigers wins to watch. We've had all kinds of great things.
Amazing what happens when the Tigers stop playing teams that owe billions of dollars through the time that neither one of us will be alive.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, when they
rough opening series.
Yeah. I mean, like, what a pivot, right? Like, you got the Dodgers and then the White Sox. Like, that's jarring.
That's champs to chumps in a different way. Oh, man. Anyway, so we are going to talk hitting, obviously. And the last time you were on, Scott, we talked about Spencer Torkelson and how to buy, you should buy Spencer Torkelson. Everything's going well. And it turns out, so far, outside of like maybe don't look at his strikeout rate, everything is going well.
Yeah, it really is. I talked about this a little bit on the Hacks and Jacks podcast, which posted this morning, Monday morning. And with, I mean, the thing with Torkelson is, yeah, the strikeouts are a little bit of a problem. They've been a problem in the past. We didn't necessarily expect that he'd fix that, right? Like he was hitting a bit, you know, this spring, but that is probably still going to be part of his game. What helps are walks. What helps is hitting the ball with some authority, acting like you're an actual power hitter, right? Like that's what we've been looking for. That's what we're seeing from him. Especially like some clutch hitting. If you want to see something very sad, you look at like his numbers with bases loaded. He's like 2 for 19 or something ridiculous. He's never really hit in clutch moments. It's a hard thing to measure, right? It's hard. You know, every time they try to measure clutch, it fails, but it's not something he's been in his career really. And so just seeing him take those little steps, that's a big deal when you're talking about a guy who had such a pedigree coming in, right? This is one of the best college hitters in the last decade. This is a guy who we expected a lot from. So while there will be other guys who are like, yeah, they're hitting the ball, but I don't really care. There's a reason we care with Tork. It's because there were some process things we wanted to see. We wanted to see him hit the ball with authority. We wanted this growth from a guy who we knew had a lot of natural talent that had just been sort of locked away by weak pop-ups for a variety of reasons. Not because he can't hit it that hard, but because he just kept missing the barrel of the bat.
Yeah, and so I guess for me, as a prospect guy, known prospect guy, when he was coming through the system, he was kind of a guy that I had pegged and a lot of others had pegged as he may be a streaky guy. He may be somebody who finds it for a while, loses it for a while, finds it for a while. Is that something that you think, like, do you think this is just a hot streak or do you think this is a sustainable thing that's going to keep on this season and beyond? I know it's early, so this is we shouldn't be talking about this. I shouldn't even ask the question, but I'm going to.
Well, I think there's two parts to that. Number one, I think, yes, streakiness will be part of his game. If you even look back at his very successful 2023, it's very a tale of two periods, right? There's the beginning of the season, like the first, I want to say month and a half, but from sometime in May on, he basically does all of his damage, right? He turns it on, and when it's on, it's amazing, right? There's plenty of players like that. I mean, a guy who's going off right now is Tyler O'Neill. He is very streaky. He's also got durability issues, which make it even more volatile. But that's what he's like, too. He's like either droppable or one of the best hitters in baseball. I'm not sure Torque's going to be that extreme. Something I am looking at, though, is that walk rate. So he's, again, we're only at 41 plate appearances. You usually want at least 50 before these numbers really mean something, which means, yeah, it's 14.6 today at 41 plate appearances. But if he has 9 more plate appearances and doesn't walk, all of a sudden it's an average walk rate, right? Like it's very easy for these guys to sort of lose these ratios. But if he keeps that walk rate up in the double digits, that's how he has softer landings on those cold streaks, right? Because you can have streaky players. You can have, like, it's hard to use comps because a lot of the easy comps are guys who are very extreme, like a Kyle Schwarber, right? You can have those guys, but you need those walk rates. You need that strikeout rate to stay around 30%. You don't want to get much worse than that, you know, on average over time. and you want that walk rate to be up above 10%, because then you get the softer landings. And then when they take off, it's a lot of really good stuff. So I think he could be streaky, but what I'm looking for is, you know, getting the ball in the air and keeping the walks up, keeping the strikeouts down enough, not down, just down enough. That 30% is about the top of where I would like to see it. If he does those things, he can be streaky without it being a problem.
So, I mean, so are you just looking, if you have Spencer Torkelson on your roster, are you just hoping it's empty power? Basically, you get you home runs, get you all the power stats, or do you think there's much else? I want to know what you think.
Well, that's the beauty of having power in the middle of the lineup. There's no such thing as middle of the lineup power and empty power, right? You can't have both, right? So the team around him isn't amazing, but it's not that bad. You know, he's got Riley Green there. He's going to have
healthy.
Yeah. I don't think it's empty power. I think the ratios could be anywhere. Like the batting average is probably going to be bad, right? Like probably more likely to be bad than good. Probably a peak of not that useful. The OBP could be slightly better than that if he keeps walking more than 10% of the time, where in OBP leagues, he gets that extra little bump. But yeah, it won't be necessarily empty power because, again, it's hard to have empty power unless you're batting at like the bottom of a lineup.
That's fair. And where I'm at with Torkelson is the same place that I was hopeful entering the year that he would do something that would stand out, something that would be a step forward, right? Because you're at the point where you're like, this is kind of a do or die season. The Tigers were at a point where he was a bubble player in spring training and he forced his way on this roster and is now, you know, hitting in the middle of the lineup because that's how baseball works. You go from bubble player to important hitter. And so it just, for me, in terms of fantasy, I'm almost like trying to gauge where this peak is before it falls off so I can say, all right, push the chips in. What do you got for me? He's almost a guy that I don't think I want to roster long term, but you buy in for the, because he was such a good prospect, you buy in for the bounce back and then you maybe try to say, hey, what can I get? Can I get a pitcher? Can I get whatever else? And we're talking redraft and coffee talk, so it's different than the dynasty leagues that I'm currently rostering Spencer Torkelson in. But I almost think there's a time where you need to decide, hey, this might be max value and just take that risk.
Yeah, I think that's definitely going to happen. It'll probably be, I mean, it's not now, right? Because every podcast you listen to is going to say, don't overreact, right? We're probably going to keep, doing that for another like 2 weeks. I'd say like collectively, you know, we had the meeting, we all talked about it. I think we started mid to late April. We'd all start, using another catchphrase. But until then, you know, we're all pretty much in lockstep. We're going to say, don't overreact. Till you'll probably start looking at 60, 70 plate appearances, which is again, just another few, like 2 weeks or so. But I mean, that is probably going to be around the time where I don't know if you're going to make a single decision of it's time to sell Torque. It's more the decision I think is going to go the other way, which is, do I have any reason to move him yet?
Yeah.
Right. Like now maybe he just goes off and then you're like, well, it's peak value, but also I love it. Right. And maybe I think there's something sustainable there. Maybe like that barrel rate staying high, something like that. It's something, I mean, really what I'm probably going to do is I'm going to look at 2023, which I think is a realistic, maybe ceiling-ish for him in terms of projectable ceiling. It's probably around what we saw in 2023, which for reminders, 31 home runs, 94 RBI, 88 runs scored, but a .233 batting average. His following year is like the floor. Right? Like what we saw in 2024, that's a floor. That's 10 home runs in 92 games, right? I'm going to be looking at a lot of that under the hood stuff, that hard hit rate, that strikeout rate, those kinds of things, and seeing what is he closer to? Is he closer to the 2023 or is it looking more like 2024? And as he kind of bounces between them, eventually I'm going to have to make like that, what you're talking about, that push in where it's like, okay, I think he's got a shot. If you think he has a shot to repeat 2023, can't really trade him because no one's going to give you that, right? Like people aren't going to give you that. And so that's when you can make that move. Or if you're like, yeah, you know what? I think he lands somewhere in the middle. That's a very tradable guy because you can talk about the upside, but you're not feeling like you're going to get it. That's a lot of calculus going on in my brain, but that's how fantasy
baseball trades work. Yeah. I mean, it happens in everyone's brain. It's just a matter of, can you say it out loud? Most times I can't. So it's nice that you did. I also love the podcast cliches. Can we just talk about that for a second? Right now, we're in the don't overreact. It's early in the season. We're a couple weeks away from, man, that's a good start, but can he sustain it? And then eventually we'll get into, man, look at that first half. It was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you just, that was, those were all the notes for the show. Like that was actually, that was a great summary of what we're going to talk about, even though we didn't actually discuss what we're going to talk about. It's going to be some combination of those things, but we'll try to make it exciting anyway.
Messages. Yeah.
We'll try to pretend like we didn't just sneak peek the ending there, but that's probably, I mean, that's where we are. There's a reason we all do it, right? There's a reason that the new guys, the guys that have been around forever, like in terms of like the players we talk about it with, you know, the new analysts, the old analysts, we all do the exact same thing. We're like, hey guys, it's been 40 played appearances, 45 maybe by the end of today, right? That's what we're going to keep saying because it's true. And like, that's just the reality of it.
It is. So let's, you know what, let's flip the script. Let's do the opposite. Let's overreact. Rafael Devers is washed. Okay. Ben Rice is an MVP candidate. Who am I missing here? I mean, Dylan Cruz is a bust as a prospect. And Yonier Diaz also is over the hill, I guess. Like, are these good overreactions?
I think the Rafael Devers one is beautiful, right? Because he had a single doubleheader yesterday. And all of a sudden, he's got an almost 20% walk rate, right? Like his strikeout rate is like, actually he had four plate appearances today. He didn't strike out or walk. So his strikeout rate's 33.3%, which is like high, but not like silly high like it was. And like his WRC plus is 114 like because he had a double header that was good. Right. Like that's how silly it is. And that's the beauty of it. Right. It's like, we can talk about all these things, but I can say like, oh yeah, he's walking 19.1% of the time, but like he had one game where he didn't walk and now it's 17.6. Like everything just flips. Like his strikeout rate dropped also by like 3% because he just had a game where that didn't happen. Pretty soon that's going to stop. But even if you look at like, your Roto rankings, like mine, yes. Like after Sunday, I moved up by 38 points. In a 5x5, right? 38, like that's silly. Mm-hmm. Like that's so many points, right? Because of a day.
Roto's
because
insane.
That's just where we are.
Roto's insane. Sometimes it's just people playing. The 30 team league I always talk about on this podcast is a Roto. And I was in like 18th place. I had three pitchers pitch today. I hadn't had pitchers in a couple of days. And now I'm back up to like 13th or 12th at the end of the day, just because I got innings. It's just how it goes in Roto. But Rafael Devers, you're right. So I kept saying about him, it looked like a timing thing. He didn't get that many at bats in spring training, whatever, right? But at a certain point, it's not the zero hits. It was all of the strikeouts that I think people were going, oh my gosh, what's wrong? Even though it was nothing and this stuff evens out. But this early in the season, the don't overreact part of the season is, as you mentioned, there are two games and all of a sudden you're looking at, oh, look, this is so much better than it was because the numbers fluctuate so much. And I think that part is where, instead of just looking under the hood numbers, instead of just looking at their Fangraphs page and going, what is up with Rafael Devers? You look at what he looks like. You go watch at bats, right? That's how I do fantasy. I don't know if that's, you know, it's a very time consuming way to do it, but you look at Rafael Devers and go, oh man, the timing looks a little bit off. He's a great hitter. That probably is going to come back.
Hold on, slow down for just 1 second. I want to go back. So you evaluate baseball players by scouting? Because that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Never.
Scout. No. Just the Fangraphs page. Thank you. Right? Like, that tells me everything I need.
Okay. That was a little patronizing for me to say, I'm sure. But it was I meant is like you're looking at strikeout rates and offers and going, oh, man, what's wrong? Dylan Cruz, another example. He has, last I checked, he had one hit. I don't know if he's gotten another one, but he was hitting 45 at one point. And you're like, oh, man, what's wrong with Dylan Cruz? Is he ever going to figure it out? When we're talking about Torkelson, is he going to figure it out? That's an extended period of time, sure. But I just specifically meant early season. It's, I think, more important to watch what do they look like. If something looks way off, something might be way off. But if something looks, you know, just like the timing's a little bit off, then you're probably sitting going, okay, well, it's not that big a deal. Not that you're going, Rafael Devers, this is a big deal because he's Rafael Devers. But point being, I guess I don't have a point. My point is that I like watching baseball. There's my point.
Yeah. Also true. I think it is a very good point because when people ask if something's wrong, they're doing it generally because a stat is wrong, mm-hmm. right? Like a stat isn't where it's supposed to be, which is why that the perfect thing to do, if you've got the time, if you've got the resources to have like MLB TV or whatever, or like you're a T-Mobile customer like me and you just get it. You look at the player and say, like someone asked me, about Luis Arraez, right? And they're like, well, what's going on with Luis Arraez? And if you look at Luis Arraez, you know what he looks like is Luis Arraez. He doesn't have a walk, like coming into today, coming into Monday's action, he didn't have a walk or a strikeout, right? Turns out when you put everything into play, you're like spinning the BABIP roulette wheel every single time. And sometimes you just keep hitting double zeros and get screwed, right? The house wins. It'll all even out. We're sort of back to that cliche, but I mean, think about this. Coming into Monday's action, Yainer Diaz, Carlos Correa, Wilson Contreras, William Contreras, Yandy Diaz, Brian Reynolds, Max Muncy, Francisco Lindor, Christian Yelich, and Ozzy Albies. What do they all have in common? A WRC plus worse than 50, right? So it's real quick to say like something's wrong, but I'm going to tell you when that many dudes have a WRC plus under 50, dudes who have performed at a high level multiple times, right? When that many of them have a WRC plus under 50, it's because the sample size is too small to get a lot of value from, right? Like that's just what it tells you, right? So if you go back like 5 years, we used to tell people, don't look at any of the stat, like don't look at any of the leaderboards till Mike Trout is on top of them. Once he's on top of them, that generally means things are starting to like regulate themselves, right? But until then, you had to kind of just wait. Cause you know, at the top would just be like some random dude you'd never heard of. And all of a sudden, like you're like, oh, this guy's better than Trout. Obviously not. Wait till Trout's at the top. And that's how you know. Right. Right. And I mean, like today, that's sort of like Ohtani and Judge. Like you, and of course, Judge is already there because he did some silly stuff against the Brewers. But there's a reason that Sal Frelick has a 162 WRC plus. And if you go and do a rolling chart, which, you know, I'm always going to plug rolling charts. If you look at a rolling chart and use like 40 plate appearances, which, or like, you know, what is it? 8 or 9 games as you're, you know, as what you're rolling, there's going to be times where all these dudes dip below 50 WRC plus. Mm-hmm. They all jump up over 150 WRC plus because you're talking about 8 or 9 games, 10 games. Right. Like the rolling charts will kind of give you a nice view of like, what is the normal range of outcomes for any given 8-game sample for a player? Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you, if you do a rolling chart of WRC plus for 9 games, it's going to be ridiculous to look at. It's just going to be huge spikes up and down, right, and up and down and up and down for every player, because this is a very, very small sample size. And that's something that I try to use to like remind myself that like, is this guy really worse than ever? Right. Or is he just having a really bad 8 games? Another great example I like to use is Yordan Alvarez. If you stretch it out to 50 games, he's never had WRC plus worse than 117 over 50 games. 50 games, he's never had one worse than 119. It's under 75 right now, and I'm sure he's had that before for 8 games. But then he goes and has 8 games where his WRC plus is like 6,000, something silly, right? And it all balances out, which again, back to the main
beauty of baseball.
Yeah. It's, you know, we end up throwing it all in the wash. It's okay to overreact. And like, there's going to be things I want to overreact to, not just Spencer Torkelson, right? Sometimes Colt Keith walking like a third of the time. Sometimes it's O'Neill Cruz having a 1-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio, right? Like I want that in my veins all the time, right? He's got like 7 steals. He's 6'7". It is funny to watch a man that big dive, right? Like, it's a ridiculous thing. And I love it. And like, it's more fun to overreact to the good things. You also have to take those with a grain of salt. Like he's probably not going to keep doing that, but it's, you know, we can accept that it's all real because anything can happen in 8 games.
Well, you know, you overreact when it's something that you believed was going to happen, and you underreact when you're like, you know, that's not what I thought was going to happen.
I'm not wrong yet.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for Hayden Wesneski to turn it around, and Colson Montgomery is going to improve himself in AAA. Like, all that stuff's definitely going to happen. You know, Jace Young's going to turn into a good major leaguer. Like, all of this is, you know, That's what I believe. So that's still going to happen. But Spencer Torkelson starting really well, we talked about believing in that. That's obviously very real, right? It just depends on your perspective and your point of view. Right now, Scott, we are going to take a quick time out here on Coffee Talk. When we come back, we're going to talk more hitting. Gotta love it. But stay with us. Coffee Talk, of course, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. Of course, Scott Chu joining me today, filling in for Nate Kosher. And Scott, I love putting Nate on the spot without telling him it's going to happen, which means I'm going to do it with you as well. So, 31 plate appearances. Speaking of our overreaction, this is 31 plate appearances, the sample size of the stats I'm about to read you. Okay. Slashing 333, 355, 533. With a 429 BABIP, 25% strikeout rate, 26 it rounds up, and a 3.2% walk rate. What do you think of this player based on those limited statistics that I just gave you?
I mean, you know what I'm going to have to say. He's hot, baby, right? Like, that's a guy, generally a guy who's not very patient, swinging, right? Missing sometimes, putting the ball in play. When you put the ball in play, you know, you're letting the BABIP gods take care of you. You're up at 429, good things can happen.
So do you buy sustainability, though, since you're letting the BABIP gods help you out so much?
I mean, if this is the way, I'm going to protect myself a little here because I know you're setting me up.
But, I'm not setting you up.
Like, no, right? You can't sustain a BABIP like that over a long period of time, over 2 weeks, 3 weeks, maybe. Over a month, that's hard. Over 2 months, probably not, and gets less and less likely as you go. So a guy who's that aggressive, it reminds me a lot of like the 2 years ago, Chicago White Sox, they never walked. They just swung all the time and they could be a pesky team, but generally speaking, it would eventually fall apart. It's just a razor thin margin of error. When you are swinging that often, you don't want to walk and you got enough swing and miss to strike out more than 25% of the time. Like I talked about 30% with Torkelson. That's if he's walking 10% of the time. Walking 3.9% of the time, the tolerance for strikeouts is much, much lower because you're already going to get out on the stuff you put in play at least a third of the time, right? Like your BABIP's only going to be around 300, right? It unless, you know, you're very silly, like you have to be like a line drive sort of hitter, like the Luis Arias and Freddie Freeman's of the world, but they don't strike out that often because they got a great hit tool. So no, generally speaking, sustainability with that, it's a razor thin margin. Even if he pulls it off for 1 year, he ain't doing it for two.
Do you have just any guesses as to who that is?
No, it there's so many. I mean, like you do the hitter list,
right?
Top 150 hitters.
So many it could be.
So like, there's a lot of dudes that can do this over 30, 40 plate appearances. There's so many. And they're like, it's like the whole taxi squad basically that I have, like the whole taxi squad is capable of this. Right. Like, I know it's not Colt Keith because he's walked a million times, but last year the answer was Colt Keith. That's exactly what he was doing over some small spurts.
It's Jackson Holiday is who that is.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
It wasn't a setup. That's just what he's doing right now. I mean, the thing is, he was bad. You know, he was bad last year as a 20-year-old. And then people were like, whoa, can he hit? And now he's doing this as a 21-year-old. And, you know, I he's a guy I've talked about a few times on First Pitch Podcast just because he's hitting so well. But then at one point, his strikeout rate was over 30. Now it's down to like 25.8 is the official number. But BABIP is always just an interesting stat for me to talk about because depending on who it is and who you ask, they're going to go, oh, yeah, of course it's BABIP. They hit the ball hard and that, you know, that's going to help their BABIP. Or sometimes like, well, that's high BABIP. They're just getting lucky. It's just, it kind of depends. It's one of those stats that I find so wildly interesting because depending on who you're talking about and the context, it can have such different meanings.
Yeah. Actually, what I've started to use as a proxy for BABIP sometimes, mostly with a bigger sample, because right now batted ball data is just like random,
right?
It's just like you shake up a bunch of dice and throw it on the table. But as we get more into the season, one I look at a lot is line drive rate, or if you're using a FanGraphs custom leaderboard and aren't that accustomed to looking at line drive rate, you can use line drive rate plus just to put it on that plus scale, make it a little easier to digest at times. But basically, if anyone's sporting a 30% line drive rate for more than 2 or 3 weeks, it's luck, right? Very, very few hitters in baseball can do that for any sustained period of time. And their names are like Freddie Freeman, Luis Arias, sometimes Yandy Diaz, right? Like that's it. But those are the guys that can do that. everyone else who's doing that for more than a month, it's a fraud. It's a fake. You just can't pull it off. Line drives are this thing. I remember when I first started getting into analytics, I was like, why don't we talk about line drives more? They have, line drives have awesome outcomes, like all the time, right? Ground balls only have good outcomes if they're hitting the exact right place and you hit them pretty hard. Fly balls only have good outcomes when they leave the yard, right? They need to leave the yard or they're out. Line drives are almost always hits, right? So we're like, why don't we do that more? Because it's random. It's just like the hard difference between a the difference between a line drive and a ground ball and a line drive and a fly ball is like fractions of a centimeter on the bat, right? Because you got round bat, round ball. You move it just a little bit, it's off, right? Or your swing plane's off just a little bit. Boom, you've got a line drive instead. So you always want to see, like, if the line drive rate's 30%, what's it going to be after this? I know it's not going to stay at 30. Where are they going to go? It's going to be more fly balls, more ground balls. But those are the kinds of like batted ball luck. Like, it's not as though it's not real. His 429 BABIP is probably real, right? Like, that's what's actually happened. It's measured. And with Jackson Holliday, our question isn't like, is he going to keep having a 429 BABIP? Because like, no, he's not. I do like the strikeout rates a little bit lower. I'd like to see the walk rate go up, but with a player like him, a guy who's 21 years old, our question isn't what he's doing today. Is that sustainable? That's a silly question. He's going to change as a hitter about a million times before he's done, assuming he plays a long career like we expect him to, right? The question is, what step does he need to take next to get to the next level? And I think a little bit of that is just decision-making. We saw it a little bit at the end of last year. The results didn't come with it. But it's just decision-making, right? Because you're not going to live just smacking the ball and hoping it lands.
Mm-hmm. You know, just back to the line drive thing. If you wonder why we don't talk about line drives more, why they don't get hit more often, just watch any random three-pitch sequence from a pitcher, and there's your answer. It's just, they're nasty. It's hard, right? Just going to throw that out there. I don't care who the pitcher is. Just watch any random three-pitch sequence, just, and you'll understand why you can't just hit line drives.
Yeah. And most players aren't trying to, right? Like, interestingly enough, most players aren't actually trying to do this. The ones that do, it's really funny. Swing speed is so popular right now because it's a very important stat. It really talks to you about power, but swing speed also talks about your approach. So two of the slowest swing speeds are in fact, Luis Arraez and Freddie Freeman. And why is that? Because they are adjust to pitch guys. Mm-hmm. They don't, you know, like every player sort of focuses on a quadrant. They're like, I'm looking for up and in, I'm looking for down and away. And then, but Freddie Freeman and Luis Arraez, it's almost like they look at a whole third, right? They're like, I'm looking for high, I'm looking for middle, I'm looking for low. And then, or they're looking like, I'm looking for inside, I'm looking for, you know, plate, I'm looking for outside. And they'll adapt their swing to hit whatever they get thrown at them, which means you can't swing it as hard because you're waiting that extra split second to really find it. Right. And you're kind of like, it's almost like in swing, you're almost holding it a little bit just to make sure you get the bat to the ball, which is very hard to do. But there are players who figure out how to do this and be successful. Those guys can hit line drives because that's what you're going to do with those. You're going to say, I found it, square it up. Right. I don't have my full swing on these all the time. I'm going to hit a lot of line drives because I'm not hitting it hard enough to be a fly ball. I'm not really trying to lift it out. A lot of times I'm saying, you know, this is a pretty good pitch, might be the best one I get this sequence, and I bet I can hit it over the second baseman.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, another slow swing speed guy is Jacob Wilson that I've heard. Because every time I talk about how I'm kind of bought into Jacob Wilson, everyone's like, well, he doesn't swing that hard. I'm like, does he need to? He's got a potentially double plus hit tool. And it seems like so far he has a little bit of ability to hit home runs to his pull side. He has two home runs already for a guy who was supposed to have zero power.
I like Jacob Wilson because you have to accept him for what he is, right?
He's Luis Arraez.
Yeah, he's some version of it, right? Like Luis Arraez is so fun because he's just a caricature of a player almost. This like just this little dude that runs around and slaps the ball everywhere. Like Jose Altuve did that a little bit early in his career too, except he was fast and Arraez isn't. Like he's also not fast. It's kind of fun. But with Jacob Wilson, like what he's trying to do is put the ball in play. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, right? Every once in a while, he's going to find a ball where he's like, I can do more. right? Now, that's not going to be 28.6% of his fly balls for very long. That's his current home run fly ball rate. That's just not going to work. But it doesn't need to, because he can hit some, like some of his ground balls can hopefully like sort of get moved to fly balls. But either way, what it, like, you don't actually have to hit the ball that hard to hit a home run if you're being very specific about it. Like our favorite dude, Isak Paredes, right? He doesn't have very good exit velocities. He doesn't swing the bat particularly hard, right? But that's because he's only trying to hit it about 330 feet, right? Because if you hit 330 feet to the right spot, it works, right? You hit it to any other spot.
Boxes.
Yeah. You try to hit it. You hit a ball 300. That's to be, I always use the example of 350, right? Because if you go 350 down any foul line, you have a home run in baseball. Mm-hmm. You've got it, right? With like some sort of weird exceptions, depending on the actual angle over in Boston, like 350 feet, always a home run, and 350 feet to center field in every park in baseball is an out. It is always an out. Like every, like the center fielder is already there, right? Like they're already waiting for this ball 350 feet into the, like into center field. So you don't have to hit the ball. Like you have to be able to hit the ball real hard to have all fields power, right? Mm-hmm. You do not have to have a lot of power to hit it 330 feet. You need more than I have in my body, but you don't need more than guys who make it to the major leagues. And if he can do that just like a dozen times, right, with the ratios he can do, that's a plus player. That's Jung-Hoo Lee, but at shortstop.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned the power that we might have, because I was a slap hitter against 75 mile an hour fastballs. I can't imagine pulling anything that's not going like 60 nowadays, probably 50, but either way, I want to bring up one more player. As you talk about the line drive, fly ball, ground ball thing, and he's a prospect, so I don't expect you to know a whole lot about him. I just don't know if you've heard of him. Have you heard of Chandler Simpson?
Yeah. Yeah. Just very recently. He's come up.
So he's going to be a fun one, because he'll hit the ball into the ground 50% of the time and beat it out. There was a video recently of him, and if you have not seen it, go find it. There's a video of him beating out a ground ball, a routine ground ball that he hit to the first baseman.
Yeah, he's wicked fast, right? like if I could do a Boston accent, that's what I'd be doing right now. So please imagine that in your minds, that was very Boston-y. But he's hit like, I've thought about him a little bit, and I wanted to say the weak spot of his game is power, but it's not. He's not trying to hit the ball hard. He probably never will. The weak spot in his game is that he plays for Tampa Bay in their organization, which means the path to playing time is as cloudy as it could possibly be. Even though they have a bunch of guys that aren't that good, they will hold you back for him, right? Mm-hmm. Like that is their MO. But if he made it to the major leagues, he'd be very interesting, because it's been a while since we had a true rabbit who could hit. We've had a true rabbit in Esturi Ruiz, who's now over in Los Angeles and still fairly meaningless for anyone outside of like NL only. Cause that was a rabbit, but he can't hit. A rabbit who can hit is very interesting. It's got that, you know, it reminds me, this is like a little bit of a faster version of like Ben Revere. You know, if you remember him from the Phillies, anybody out there, this feels like that, which is a very valuable player in a very specific context.
We need to get Matt Heckman, the dynasty manager of Pitcherlist, on here, because he needs somebody to write a dynasty article called A Rabbit Who Can Hit about Chandler Simpson.
As like a, almost as like a children's book, right? The rabbit that could hit. Swinging his little carrot, you know?
All right. Well, I'm going to pitch that to Matt right once we get off of here. Anyway, yeah, no, he's really interesting. You're not looking at power. You're looking at what we all thought Billy Hamilton was supposed to be, maybe would be the best thing that Chandler. I mean, that's the easy comp, so I'm just going to make it is Billy Hamilton. So let's switch gears a little bit for our last 5 minutes or so here, Scott. For players, especially prospects, young players who are struggling, and for whatever reason that may be, how long do you wait until you worry about leash? We're talking redraft. How long do you wait till you start dropping? And I'm thinking guys like Dylan Cruz, guys like Cam Smith. Now, Cam Smith, I mean, he's had like 15 at-bats in AA or whatever it was, and then all of a sudden is in the majors, right? That's a hard adjustment. Dylan Cruz got a couple more hits, or at least one more hit, and is now hitting over 100, which is awesome, and he has a couple of steals. But that struggle early on, I mean, that starts to bring up some questions, especially when it comes to prospects, because prospects have a very short window of time before fans are like, can this guy even play?
Yeah. And I've got sort of two answers to this question. The first answer to the question is my patience is as long as the manager's, right? Like if the manager isn't going to let them play through it, like, you know, Cam Smith being a good example of that, right? He's now sat in three of the last five. That is a player that's really hard to roster, especially when you're talking about an outfielder, right? Who is supposed to just be able to hit and hit for power in 12 team leagues. There are more of those out on the wire. Michael Conforto might be out there right now batting fourth, I think, for the Dodgers every day, right? You're at the point now where it's like, why am I holding Cam Smith instead of Michael Conforto in my, you know, in a redraft 12 team league, right? Like, why? One of them's got a much better opportunity than the other, right? And the path to, I mean, we talked about this a little bit before, the path to success for Cam Smith is extremely difficult to see in terms of right now. Long-term, it's easy to see. Yep. Right now, it's hard. I get it. You want to let a guy learn how to hit at the major league level. Unless he hasn't learned, like he's barely a professional, right? Like he just doesn't have very much time in the major leagues, or it, not just major leagues, in pro ball. Houston hadn't start, like Houston didn't see him until spring training, right? He was not a part of their camp. Their coaches did not talk to Cam Smith until the offseason, right? Mm-hmm. He was with the Cubs before then. So the other guys that have come up, like straight from Double A, it's like Juan Soto, who's been in the organization for the Mets. He was like his third year. Like they knew what they had. The Astros don't know what they have. They're still learning. So that leash is going to be pretty short, right? If you've got a tight bench, your replacement level in like a 12 team, three outfield league, Cam Smith is probably below that level right now. I think, you know, he did not get ranked on this last hitter list because I don't see it. I need to see it with him. I know you had to buy in before he hit the ranks. It's just so hard to see how he gets there. I think the other answer to this is trying to understand sort of in the same vein, what does the path to success for that player look like? Right. And how much did I pay to try to see it with Dylan Cruz? I paid he was definitely a top 100 ranked hitter coming in. You drafted him to be a starting outfielder. So I'm going to wait just a little bit. And also I know what a successful Dylan Cruz looks like and what that path is. And it's not like he's strayed so far from it that he can't get there. Right. He just, you know, again, bad eight games, bad nine games. I think he can still get there. The Nationals don't seem at all ready to, like, they're not giving up on him at all. And even if they wanted to, they can't. They don't have other outfielders really to play. So he's sort of on the other end of the spectrum. I just let it go. Junior Caminero, another guy. He's not technically a prospect anymore, but he's off to a bit of a slow start. But like, if you wanted, and like, if you're cutting him because you want someone more exciting at third base, those guys aren't more exciting than Junior Caminero. Junior Caminero has more upside than all of them, right? Again, you look at Dylan Cruz. If you need a speed guy, he's probably got more upside than anyone on your wire. So why are you dropping him when he's the one with the best upside, right? That's like actually foreseeable, potentially projectable this year. With Cam Smith, it's hard to make that projection. So I can't make the same analysis for him, but you know, I do want to see like what's wrong. Jordan Walker's actually at the opposite. He's off to a hot start, but he's still hitting everything on the ground. So I'm still super skeptical of it. Right. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a small sample. We talked, the batted ball stuff doesn't matter. But like this dude always has hit a ton of ground balls and he's still hitting a ton of ground balls. Right. Which leads me to believe that maybe this is just the lucky bit. Like his numbers are because he's kind of been fortunate because he's still just pounding just killing worms every time he's up there. So it's a little bit about that analysis of like, what is this player doing wrong? Right. For example, what are they doing wrong? Just a smattering of things. That's a bad week, right? Hard to figure that out. But if they've got a very specific problem or their manager has started to platoon them or just not play them as much, then you got to start moving on, especially for like outfielders in 12 team, three outfield leagues. The replacement level is just so high.
What I'm hearing is that everyone should go pick up Ryan Kreidler right now. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, actually, if you go back, it was very well planned. If you go back through that and look at like every fifth word, you spell it out. It's yay, Ryan Kreidler. The whole time. It was very good. Don't go back and check it. Just know that is what happened.
Fun fact, he is getting regular playing time on my 30 team league because he just gets some playing time and I have nothing else. He was my starting shortstop because Gunnar Henderson was hurt. And it's been a fun start to the year. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk more about Scott's hitter list because I have it pulled up right now, and I'm just going to start randomly asking about guys towards the bottom of it because that seems like a fun idea for me to do. And that's what we're going to come up with next. We appreciate you listening to us. We got more coming on Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. We got the hitting man, Scott Chu, here, and we are talking hitters. We've talked overreaction. We've done our overreacting. Let's talk about some reactions that Scott has had because he puts out a hitter list on Pitcher List regularly. That's an odd thing to say, hitter list on Pitcher List. Anyway, he puts out one regularly. So I'm just going to scroll to the bottom here. It's 150 hitters, and I'm in tier 13, which is the bottom tier. There's a few guys that I want to ask you about. One of them being at 135, who is on the list now from unranked, Willier Abreu. He's been really good.
Yeah. And he's really fun because, so when you talked about the guy who like strikes out 25% of the time and then walks like 4% of the time, that's Willier Abreu previously. He's walking a bunch right now too, right? Mm-hmm. So Willier Abreu has some durability concerns. He's been platooned a little bit because Boston, we don't talk about as much, but they actually platoon guys all the time. Like they platooned Jarren Duran forever until they were ready for him to be their starting guy. So Willier Abreu, he can hit the ball pretty hard. He can hit, you know, 20-ish home runs. I think if you give him some run, he can be a very interesting player, especially if he keeps walking, right? Because they've let Willier Abreu hit like, you know, third or fourth. They even did it at times last year. If he can do that for the Red Sox, I think that's an unsung hero sort of player who, if you look at the previous stat lines, just kind of wasn't that interesting, was sort of just a, you know, run of the mill outfielder that you would stream for a couple weeks while he was hot. And then when he got cold, you let it go. But I'm actually really sad you didn't start with tier 11 because I consider myself a writer of prestige, a writer, you know, that really puts a lot of thought. So if you look at my note, I write notes on various players in the preseason. I do a note on every player in season. I only, you know, I highlight guys in each tier, and I put a lot of time, effort, and drafting to my Spencer Torkelson note, which I will read for you now. If you've got a moment, it's "Hooray Spencer Torkelson." That's the note. That's the whole note. It's one of my finest pieces of writing in my career, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's really good. It's a lot to take in. So can you repeat it? I don't think I got it all the first time.
Hooray, Spencer Torkelson.
Okay.
And that's, you know, like Nick has his ace is going to ace kind of thing. What hooray. I think what I'm going to start doing is just like when dudes are good that I want to be good, it's just going to be a hooray, right? It won't be necessarily the best guys, but like guys that are doing something that we've just been waiting for them to do, even for just a week. I just want to give them a good hooray.
So hooray, Willier Abreu. And one of the reasons that I bring him up, and I bring him up a lot, weirdly enough, because he won a gold glove. Those guys are valuable and they're going to get playing time, even if they're not hitting as well as you think they should be, or they're going to get time to figure it out. And that's one of the things that I think doesn't get talked about enough is how defense can help a hitter figure something out, because that gives them run. I have talked about a lot with prospects more than anything, but Willier Abreu is a good fielder, which means he's hitting well right now, and he will continue to have that opportunity.
That's where defense matters, right? Because
for fantasy.
For fantasy, of course.
Right.
So the reason it matters is because when you have a good glove in the outfield, they want, like, the team wants you to play more,
yeah,
right? Like, they want good defenders out there. They will ignore bad defense if you're an amazing hitter. But if you show you can hit at all, right? At all. And have a good glove, they're like, you're in, right? Like, usually you see this in the infield where like these middle infield guys will stick around forever because they're pretty good with the glove. Not even great, just pretty good. And they just keep getting work, right? So Willier Abreu has a good glove. He's getting work. And just, man, I don't know what has happened, but that, the rolling charts on his strikeout rate and walk rates, if you start it from like last year, they sort of wobble in the same places. And then starting this year, strikeout rate just plummets, right? Rolling strikeout rate down like 10, 15%. And the walk rate skyrockets. It's very, very interesting. I don't know if they had him working on like pitch recognition. I would love to see an article from one of those beat writers that comes out that talks about what he did and how they've been working with him. But I mean, he struck out twice today, but it's a really exciting thing. So if he keeps that walk rate up, strikeout rate down, I mean, all of a sudden we're talking about a player who, if he stays healthy, we're talking 20 home runs, you know, good ratios instead of okay ratios. Could be a very interesting player again that has gone under the radar, because for the most part, he's been some, you know, especially last year, he was either some combination of average or hurt.
And if you want evidence that your glove matters, if the team thinks you can hit it all, Michael Ciani was in a position battle with Victor Scott until like the last 2 days of camp for the Cardinals for the center field job, because he can field the baseball really well in center field. He had like negative hits. I think he owed hits to the Cardinals. I don't think he had any. Like,
he just borrowed them.
Right. Like, it's crazy. But he brought that battle right up to the end of spring training because he's got a really good glove, and he had the job most of last year because he's got a really good glove. All right. Staying in your tier 13, it's really, really interesting to see that you have Tyler Soderstrom and Kyle Manzardo right next to each other, because I can't remember if it was the last podcast or the podcast before, Nate and I talked about those exact two. And we actually, the question was, which one would you rather pick up based on their hot start? And so the fact you have them next to each other means I definitely have to ask you about either one of them. Are you buying either one? Do you prefer one over the other? I mean, one's ranked higher, obviously, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything because they're right next to each other.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking tier 13. Right. And again, it's my last tier. It's like 132 through the end. And then there's also this taxi squad of guys. Mm-hmm. So like there's a bunch of first basemen in there too. And actually I forgot to remove Soderstrom from that. So he's actually listed twice in the article, but it's easy to say they're interchangeable. I think one with Soderstrom, I feel real confident he's going to play. Mm-hmm. Right. Like that's the start. I know he's going to play. And whereas with Manzardo, if he slumps, it's easy for the Guardians to bench him. They've loved doing it ever since they traded for him from Tampa. Just benching him because he's not doing great. So there's a little bit of risk there. Although if you just look at skill, I think Manzardo's skill set is a little safer because he's going to have probably a better batting average. He still hits the ball hard, but he's kind of like a more diluted version. Like he kind of spreads it along. It's like, yeah, I'll have a little bit better ratios, but worse power. Where Soderstrom's like one of the more classic mashers. Although if the strikeout rate stays low, Soderstrom could be even better than that. I think the guy I like more is right now is Soderstrom again, because I'm seeing the power, the strikeout rate is like around where it needs to be. And there's just no chance he hits. Like, I just don't see how he gets benched, even if he has a bad, like 2-3 weeks. I just don't see how that happens. So that's the big difference. Whereas with Manzardo, I always feel like I'm a cold streak away from him not being rosterable anymore.
We were a split decision. I had Soderstrom and Nate said Manzardo. So I'm glad that you broke the tie in the correct way for who's hosting with you this specific episode. My thing with Soderstrom and his playing time, the one wrench that gets thrown in is Nick Kurtz. He is a first baseman in AAA who's absolutely on fire, great hitter. The last comp somebody I saw, which doesn't necessarily mean it's right, it's just the last one I saw, so it's in my mind. Somebody said he reminds them of Jim Thome, which is interesting. Now, it's not impossible that everybody gets playing time. In fact, it's still likely that everybody gets playing time, but the A's top prospect at this point is also a first baseman. So that brings something into question, because you can't really move. Soderstrom and Kurtz are first base DH at that point. And so you almost have to move Rooker into the outfield. And right now that means Andujar goes to the bench, which is fine. That doesn't hurt you at all. But at some point, I think that there's going to be a question about who's playing first base.
That's soon. True. I think for fantasy purposes, the thing we would love to see is giving Soderstrom some time behind the dish too. They're never going to do it again. No. He's not good at it at all. But for fantasy purposes, it would be awesome because he would just be a fantastic fantasy catcher. Mm-hmm. I think Kurtz again. Kurtz is a legit prospect. The thing is, when you've already got the job, it's hard to take it away if you're hitting, right?
Like they, oh yeah, absolutely.
That is the thing. So Kurt's not yet on the 40-man roster at the moment. Right.
There's a date. We all know the date already.
Yeah, there is.
It's the service time date. I don't know it offhand, yeah. But we all know what it is already.
Yeah. And, you know, he hasn't played a ton, right? He's sort of in that Cam Smith boat that he's drafted in 2024, fourth overall pick there. The reason I think Soderstrom's very safe in terms of playing time is because Kurtz is good enough. Like, forget, I love the comps because they're very helpful. It's hard to take them super seriously when they're like, oh yeah, he reminds me of this Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
sure he does. No disrespect to that person. I'm absolutely confident they saw something in the player that reminded them of Jim Thome. That's not the same as saying this guy will be Jim Thome, right? I want to recognize that right off the bat. It's just hard when that's the thing, like, cause your brain's kind of like, okay, Jim Thome, you got it. But there's two things that would need to happen for Soderstrom to lose the job. He would have to not be hitting, and Kurtz would have to be hitting the cover off the ball, right? Both of those things have to happen for Soderstrom to potentially lose that job. And you need both of them to be happening at the same time, right? That's a little bit of lightning in a bottle, right? I think for now, there's going to be an excuse to keep him in AAA. Obviously, if he keeps doing what he's doing now, he's going to force them out. But I think Soderstrom can do enough to just stay there and let the A's say, hey, Kurtz, how about you stay down there? Let's just keep you for another year anyway.
Yeah, you know, the only pushback I have against what you said is you're comparing Kurtz to Smith, because Smith was AA for like 20 at-bats. Kurtz, still not a whole lot of at-bats, but it's at AAA, and he's hitting four something with four home runs already. Like, it's insane. And it's a higher level. That's the pushback I'm having versus, you know, saying it's similar to Cam Smith.
Well, so similar to Cam Smith, is he was drafted last year and he just started playing last year, but scenario is much better, right? Because the A's at least saw him for all of 2024. They coached him while he was there for 2024. And now he's got 38 plate appearances in AAA. Those are the things that Cam Smith doesn't have, because that's where that comparison ends. And that's why we're kind of worried about Cam Smith, who was also tearing the cover off the ball and I am more excited about Kurtz generally, but that's why I'm more excited, because like, he's getting the stuff, the bare minimum of coaching that he needs. Whereas again, with Cam Smith, the Astros just saw him in camp.
Right. Okay. So more players, because we like more players. Kerry Carpenter sitting at 99 on your most recent update of the hitter list. I'm assuming, just based on the date, I'm assuming this is before he started mashing lefties for fun. So how big is that going to, like, how much overreacting are we going to do on the fact that he's hit a lefty a couple times?
Yeah. So the fact that it's a lefty is really important there, right? Because Kerry Carpenter is not ranked where he is because of talent. It's mostly opportunity. When you play in a platoon, even on the large side of it, it is really hard to get above like the 90s in terms of rank, because you're not going to be there for 20, 30 games. You just won't. So it's hard for me to rank them much higher than that. The way that he moves up, you know, inching towards that, you know, low 80s, high 70s, and maybe even beyond, the way Kerry Bonds gets there is not reminding me that he's still Kerry Bonds. I already knew that. I didn't know he'd get the chance to do it against lefties and that he'd actually pull it off against lefties. That's why there's going to be a bit more of a reaction to him hitting a couple home runs than, say, you know, if Jorge Soler were to hit 2-3 home runs on Tuesday, I'm not going to care as much, because I'm like, I already knew what your job was. I already knew what you are. I know what you do. You do that sometimes. I've already baked that in. With Carpenter, his rank was suppressed because of the role. And I'm like, well, if it's a new role, that's how you jump. I mean, that's where all the big jumps on this list are at this time of the year. They are role changes, or Eugenio Suarez just like still being absolutely perplexing as to how he just sort of turned himself around out of nowhere. But role changes are where ranks really jump this time of year. That's where you see it with like Austin Wells, Lars Nootbaar, Spencer Torkelson, Tommy Edman, those guys, they get big jumps. The guys that fell the most on the list, same deal, right? Brendan Donovan's not always hitting, you know, second. Or Luis Garcia Jr. dropped 47 spots because now he's a platoon guy with Ahmed freaking Rosario, right? Like, platoon.
Sound happier about it.
Yeah. a platoon guy for the Nats just ain't it. Like, I can't.
Right.
Yeah, you know, like as a full-time player batting third all the time, like he was an interesting second baseman. As a platoon guy for the Nats, you're not interesting anymore. So that was a bummer. Or like Mason Winn, he falls quite a bit because now he's the number nine hitter instead of number one. That's a lot of plate appearances just off the table.
You know, I don't know how mainstream his nickname is. Kerry Bonds is Kerry Carpenter. That's a literal nickname that's been getting used. I don't know if that's known outside of Tigers Twitter, but that is...
You should all know it, right? Kerry Bonds.
That's what they call. That's not Scott misspeaking. That is a nickname that is happening for Kerry Carpenter right now. Because he hits home runs, and that's what he does. And he's a lefty, and he's Kerry Bonds, I guess. All right. Nick,
this is just the beauty of, like, fandom and baseball. It's like, you don't have to be a great player to get a nickname. You just have to, like, do something fun a few times. Like, I'm calling John Kenzie Noel Big Christmas forever. Because even though it was against the Tigers, he hit some big home runs. And Big Christmas is an amazing name, right? Travis Shaw, still in my mind, is the mayor of Ding Dong City, right? Yeah, it's career, but a blip on the radar. But
who was the Tigers? Who was the Tiger? Ronnie Rodriguez. Do you remember his nickname?
No.
Oh, I think I can't remember either, but he was a rapper and it was his rap name became his baseball nickname, which I always, I can't remember. I'll have to look it up. I can't remember it, but that was always a fun one. All right, one more question for you, Scott, and then we are going to wrap this thing up. And this might be a tough one to answer, but those are the most fun for me personally to ask. Who was, or you can give us a few names, I guess, but who is like it sticks in your mind as the toughest to rank on your list?
So
that's a good noise. That means I asked a good question.
So usually the toughest guys are going to be like prospects who have just come up. I'm not sure where to slot them in. Mm-hmm. Or someone that's just like on this crazy hot streak and I don't know what to do with it. Think like Bryson Stott last year for like the month of May, he was like the best hitter in baseball. And I was like, he's not the best hitter in baseball, but I don't know what he is. right now, actually the hardest guy for me to rank is someone who is you'll probably figure it out because we just saw him in Detroit for a 3-game series. He's just absolutely loaded with talent. And I watch him and I see it and he can't connect with the ball. He just kind of looks lost at the plate in terms of all that ability has nowhere to go. It's Lewis Robert Jr. I have no idea what to do with him right now. He's getting cut in 12 team leagues all over the place. People are cutting him. And I tell people to pick him up because by talent, we're talking top 50 hitter in the league easily, right? But the White Sox seem to have absolutely no idea how to make him good. They already ruined Eloy Jimenez, quite frankly. And I don't think they have any idea what they're doing with Lewis Robert Jr. And I desperately hope that they find a way to trade him. Like, I really thought he might go to the Dodgers or something and then probably just get, you know, absolutely explode or something like that. But he's hard to rank because I don't trust that team. I don't trust that development. All I know is that he is just a barrel of dynamite if you get him to be unlocked, because we've seen it. We've seen it multiple times.
You know, it's interesting that you said the sentence that you don't think the White Sox know what they're doing with Lewis Robert Jr. That's about four extra words than you need there. I'm just going to throw that out.
Usually I reserve that kind of analysis for the Rockies. Like when people ask me about Zach Veen, I'm like, there's absolutely no chance they do what's right by Zach Veen. None. He's a prospect. He's got some pop. He's got a bunch of speed. And the Rockies called him up to probably play him three times, complain that he like spit on the grass and send him home.
What is it? Make him dye his hair back purple or something. Remember he came with purple hair. They made him dye it back to normal color or whatever God that
forbid,
was.
He shows some excitement for being a Colorado Rocky, right? Like God forbid they called up Zach Veen just to tell us like a week from now, I made this joke on my other podcast. I'm doing it again. They're going to be like, oh, and you know what? We talked Charlie Blackmon out of retirement. So he's going to play too. And he's going to take the playing time. Like that's what I feel like. Well, that's the Rockies.
You could have had Veen, you know, out of spring training, but when you have the chance to sign Mickey Moniak and play whoever else they threw in front of him, you have to do it. I don't even remember the name of the guy. You have to do it, right? You have to.
To be fair, for those folks that are in NL-only leagues, Mickey Moniak has a big zone contact problem, and one way to fix that is Coors Field. Only works half the time. But one way to fix that is Coors Field. So he might be an interesting like NL only style sleeper at home, like streamer. But again, we're talking about a guy who you might stream in NL only. That's the level of relevance here. It's a long fall from a guy who was a very high draft pick. But yeah, you can. His problem is fixable in Coors. It'll be actually worse than it was when he leaves Coors, thanks to the Coors effect, where guys really struggle to adapt. And actually, you have to remember, they also struggle on the way back in, right? Mm-hmm. So like Hunter Goodman had a bit of a bad series there. It's like, it's actually hard when you've been raking against the balls that move all the way that they're supposed to, and now they just like stop, like right. They don't move as much as they're supposed to. You also miss then. It takes a little bit to get back adjusted to that.
All right, I got to stop looking at this list because I'm going to keep asking you questions, but I know he just got hurt. But I was like pushing Ivan Herrera on the First Pitch podcast because and I thought it was legit. I thought he had playing time. I see he's just on your taxi squad. Was he on his way into that top 150 before the injury?
Yes. So our Process Plus metrics loved him. You know, Kyle Bland's done an awesome job putting that together. It actually really liked him last year. And he had a bit of a buzz in spring training, not for his talent, though. It was just for his role, like tons of secure playing time. I was a little hesitant, but the more I thought about it, I was like, man, even immediately after that list posts, I look at it and go, I could move these guys around, right? Because like Ryan Jeffers is one. Yeah, Ryan Jeffers, Gabriel Moreno, they are in that bottom tier because I think over the course of a whole season, they had like just a better chance of finishing around this rank maybe. But like, if you told me, hey, I have Ryan Jeffers and I wanted to add Ivan Herrera when, you know, before he got hurt, I would have said, yeah, go for it, dude. Sounds great. Like, you know, let your free flag fly. Just do it. And so I'm kind of looking at the list now and I'm like, man, that Jeffers could probably go down and I could have brought him up. In fact, the catcher I did choose to add was Hunter Goodman because I'm like, he's about to roll into Coors. This might be the perfect time. And it didn't work out that way, but yeah. And really you can think of that tier 13 in the taxi squad can be incredibly interchangeable, depending on what it is you're looking for. Like Kyber Ruiz is also only on the taxi squad, but that's because what he's doing is exactly what he looks like when he's hot. He's not showing me anything new. He's just hot and, you know, hits for contact. And again, you spin the BABIP roulette wheel and sometimes it comes up your number over and over again.
Ladies and gentlemen, Scott Chu. Scott, tell us what you're doing and where we can find your work.
At this point, it's just hitter list now. I'll be doing the hitter list. It comes out every Wednesday. Hopefully, like I was just in Pittsburgh for work for a whole week, so it didn't come out till Thursday. I've also got the Hacks and Jacks podcast, which publishes on Monday mornings at 1 a.m. Me and Brett Ford have a nice time just talking hitters. Again, they don't let me talk pitchers, right? Like this is pitcher list. We got plenty of nerds for that. I talk about the guys who they have to watch while they're watching their pitcher. Nick lets me talk about those guys. That's it. So that's all we talk about. Hacks and Jacks.
At least you have a role. I talk about nothing most of the time and they just keep me around for some reason. Scott, appreciate you joining me. Nate Kosher will be back next week. We will have another episode of Coffee Talk. Thanks for joining us here on this one. Coffee Talk, of course, part of the Pitcher List Podcast Network.